Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Joe Pisapia, and welcome to Fantasy Sports Today right here on Sports Grid. It is me, it is the Welsh, Christopher Welsh from In This League, and it's you, and we got a great show for you today. We're going to do a little football with Andrew Erickson from Pro Football Focus, his last spot with us of the season, kind of putting a button on things and looking ahead to 2021. We got some baseball talk today, we got a little NBA with Brett Levy, we got so much fun, even some conversations about drunk Tom Brady, which might be my new favorite thing. Next to you, of course, Welsh. Welcome back, my friend. Bogman last 2 days, Welsh today. I'm just spoiled rotten.
Oh, we're all just so excited. I'm excited to talk about Brady drunkenly being dragged around. That might be my favorite thing on the planet. I don't want to get ahead of it. You shouldn't even brought it up. I get all like, I'm getting all excited talking about like Brady doesn't even know where he is. He's blacking out. His kids are like, Dad, don't fling. And it's just great.
Oh, he's throwing trophies. It's unbelievable. Like, I mean, you know, we expect these things from Gronk, but the humanization of Tom Brady, it's fascinating. It sounds like a movie. I think we're going to have to go.
What is he playing? I mean, that might be the best thing about it. It's like, what is he holding back? It's like, oh, everyone's going to judge him and he's going to get in trouble. No, he just retires. He can just do whatever he wants. You want, Brady, the best Brady.
I know. I think it's, well, we'll talk about that later on. But there was actually a trade in Major League Baseball, and it might have some really important real and fantasy ramifications. So let's get after that. 3-way deal where the Royals pick up Andrew Benintendi from the Red Sox. Now, Welsh, I want to start here with this one. It's the top of the headlines. It's very important. We'll go through the rest of these as well. But Benintendi was a player that, burst onto the scene, had this 2020 kind of vibe about him, right? I don't mean the year. So in a positive way, I mean, like, in terms of power and stolen bases. You know, we're going to have to, like, rephrase that now that I'm thinking about that. In the baseball world, we say a player is 2020. I don't know. Maybe he's a 2020 guy. That might have a negative connotation on it. But Benintendi flashed that. Probably got a little overhyped. He's still very young. He's still around 26 years old, I believe. And certainly there's enough talent there to think that the Royals can maybe get him right. And the Royals have made a lot of low-key moves. Carlos Santana, they've bolstered the pitching staff a little bit, bolstered the bullpen a little bit. And it feels like they're finally getting back into it. They have Merrifield. We'll see if Soler bounces back. Clearly, Hunter Dozier is one of my favorite guys. I love him. Sal Perez is healthy. So, what do you think about this move? And let's start from the Royals side and Benintendi and what it does for his value. Because I got to tell you, the first mock of the year, I took him late. I think it was the 20th round. He was a free square. I'm like, what do I have to lose? So what's your take here on Benintendi and this new home for him in Kansas City?
I love the moves that Kansas City is making. Just like, you know, you're going to be a relatively cheap organization. You're not going to spend a bunch of money. So find ways to win. Take bets. That's exactly what you have to do. And that's what they did. Benintendi was a 4+ war guy in 2018. This is a guy that got it done. He's trended downward a little bit, and he's going to be held really, really unfairly against his 2020 because he had like a 30+ strikeout rate, you know, in however many games he actually played. And things just did not pan out well as far as the development was in this last year and whatever you want to call 2020. But again, 2018, a 4.4 war guy. This is a perfect bet. He can hit higher in the lineup. There's going to be run opportunities. There's some speed. There's manufacturing runs. I really like it. I think this, I mean, it's not sexy, but I think it boosts his like draftability now. Where before you just really weren't sure like what he was going to be getting into. He has to hit relatively high in this lineup. And I think I'm not sure if he's going to be a target. I don't know if I want to quite say that, but he's going to be someone I'm comfortable drafting, probably as like a fifth outfielder. Maybe you get some stolen bases. Yeah. Maybe he's a 15-15, 280 guy. Someone you take post 150, and it's a solid bet.
And the trade's not going to inflate his ADP, in my opinion. I don't think it's going to do anything to his ADP. So I think that's perfect. I think you nailed it. If anything, maybe just a change of scenery is always good for him. And the Mets in this whole three-way deal ended up with Khalil Lee, prospect. And they've had a very interesting offseason, Welsh, because they've gotten more athletic. It's one of the things that I've always killed the Mets for the last few years. They're slow. They are a slow, plodding, non-athletic kind of team. So when you're looking at them, Welsh, now that they've added Malik Smith, Jonathan Villar, guys like Khalil Lee, starting to change a little bit of that organization's, I guess, you know, mentality in terms of getting some more athleticism on the diamond.
Khalil Lee is not slow. He is a really fast guy. He's a really athletic outfielder, and he's a 40-plus stolen base option. And what's interesting is he's not quite like a Malik Smith. There is some pop in there. You know, he's grown on his body. I've been around him a whole bunch over the last couple of years. Two or three years ago, he was actually playing with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the Arizona Fall League. I've seen him back here with the Royals system. And the Royals, they've had a little bit of a downtick in some of their development over the last like 18 months as far as some of their players and, you know, boosting up and advancing as they move through the levels. But Khalil Lee is a guy that his bat still needs to get there. But if it gets there, there is pop. So, I mean, there could be 15 right. homer pop if the bat goes. And you're talking about 40 plus stolen bases. So they traded Isaiah Green in the Lindor mm-hmm. trade. I actually really like this bet. And because Lee moves pretty close up into the system, you know, probably top right. five or six now is one of their players. So clearly, Pecro Armstrong, Mets are doing some good stuff.
Some other news and headlines. Broncos release AJ Boye, so it's going to be fascinating to see where he lands. The NBA is talking about having the slam dunk contest at halftime of the All-Star game. I think that's a little wacky. And Carl Anthony Towns returned last night from COVID protocols. He's missed a ton of time. He's back for the T-Wolves last night. And when we come back with Brett Levy, we're going to talk about that and the other standouts in the NBA. I don't know how I feel about the whole dunk contest in the middle of the halftime. No. That can't possibly work. Just don't do it this year. If the guys don't want to do it, don't make them do it. I know there's money in it, but I don't know. Do the simulation one and let everybody hang out and watch. That's what I say. When we come back, we're going to talk to Brett Levy about last night in the NBA. We'll be right back right after this, right here on
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Fantasy Sports Today right here on Sports Grid. A little later this hour, we're going to have from Pro Football Focus, Andrew Erickson. And, of course, we're going to talk a little baseball with the Welsh. But it's time for basketball, which means our fantasy standouts and our good pal, Brett Levy, who may or may not be in the new Space Jam movie. We don't know. We've heard rumors that he's an extra. We'll see what happens with that. But let's get after it. Let's take a look at last night's standouts. And let's start here. At the top of the board, Norman Powell, 28 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals for him. Bradley Beal, 24 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. Of course, they lost, but, you know, that goes without saying. John Collins, 33 points, big night for John Collins, 8 rebounds, 1 assist, a steal, and a block. Trae Young, 25 points, 7 rebounds, 15 assists, 1 steal, and a block. And Luka, 28 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks, triple-double, can't be stopped. Luka's just on fire, man. The guy's having a great season. Brett, I want to start, if I may, kind of where we left off with the return of Carl Anthony Towns, who had obviously dealing with COVID repercussions for quite some time. Finally back on the court last night, which is good news, obviously, for the Timberwolves. Unfortunately, it didn't result in a win. Still another loss for them, but I imagine his presence now back on the court. He's scored 18 points last night. I imagine it's going to help Anthony Edwards here out quite a bit. So what's your take here on the return of Carl Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns, excuse me, and the ripple effect that he's going to have now that he's back on that team?
Yeah, I think you're right, Joe. I think it will have a positive effect. He mentioned that he had a lot of symptoms and it really affected him. So it may take him a few games to get like fully back. You know, he even said he was going to go through warmups last night before fully committing to playing. So it could take a little bit of time till we're used to seeing the Carl Anthony Towns we're all used to seeing. But you know, he'll help that team. He'll help Anthony Edwards. He'll help D'Angelo Russell get shots. He'll be another asset for Ricky Rubio to find assists to. So he's an elite player in this league. He's one of the best bigs in the league. And, you know, it's going to be great for the Timberwolves and their fans to have him back on the court.
Brett, Joe right at the top was saying like, oh, Doncic having a great year. And statistically, he's always kind of there. But two of these top performers, I'm really curious your take when you look at them fantasy-wise. I think if you were to say Luka Doncic and Bradley Beal in one sentence, people go, ooh, Luka. Luka this year has been averaging just about 28-9-9, 2.23s a game. But he's got a 4 turnovers. Bradley Beal, though, 32-5-4 on the year with 2.5 threes per game. And by most standard fantasy calculators, Bradley Beal has been the better fantasy option the entire season. Mm-hmm. So Bradley Beal or Luka Doncic for you?
Well, I think, you know, you're looking at two different players because Luka's got the ball in his hand so much, where Beal kind of splits that responsibility with Westbrook. So I think that's why the turnovers are up, because, you know, you see Doncic handling the ball late in games. He's the decision maker. He's the guy that's bringing the ball up the court. He's in the pick and rolls. He's splitting the double teams. Beal is fortunate enough where they have probably another guy that's really the primary ball handler. Beal's more the secondary ball handler. But Beal's an elite scorer. He's an elite player. He can score at all three levels. He can pass. He rebounds. He's always productive. I always like playing Bradley Beal in daily fantasy. I probably target him a little more than Luka, just because Luka's targeted by the masses. Everyone knows who Luka Doncic is. Not that people don't know who Bradley Beal is, but sometimes you see like the percentages Beal's a little lower. So I get what you're saying, but Luka's averaging almost a triple-double. I don't know how you bet against that man.
No, you clearly don't, and you don't bet against Kyrie Irving scoring points either. So we get to slide number two here. More NBA standouts. Kyrie with 35 points, 4 rebounds, 8 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. Kawhi Leonard had 36 points of his own, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and a block. Zach LaVine, 46 points. Big night for Zach LaVine, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, and a block. Giannis with 47 points of his own, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal. Al Horford, 25 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, 4 steals, and a block. I always like to take your temperature on this because, you know, we started off with Embiid, and that was a few weeks ago. That was your pick. So now that we are a few more weeks into the season here, where are your MVP stocks lying right now, Brett, if I had to kind of press you for it? And obviously, we know the odds on FanDuel are still up there. People want to go make those wagers. But in your opinion right now, is it still LeBron at the top? Is, you know, has Giannis closed the gap here a little bit? In your opinion, where do you put the MVP odds in your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's LeBron's right now to lose. I think Embiid is still in the running. I think Nikola Jokic could end up being in the running for this thing. He's been a fantasy standout quite a bit as well, Joe. We always talk about Jokic.
We do.
So I think those guys are in the conversation, but LeBron is, you know, averaging less turnovers than a year ago, more points, more minutes, better defensively. Like, everything he's doing is just better. So he's unbelievable right now. I'm not sure that the Lakers' plan coming into their season was let's rely on our 35-year-old and let our 27-year-old have some time to figure this out. But, you know, it's worked out for them. The Lakers are playing fantastic, and LeBron's been the catalyst for all of it.
It's funny you say that. Scott Bogman, who was on here yesterday, we both host a basketball podcast, in this league fantasy basketball podcast, and we were talking about this just the other day with Jokic, that if we were redoing things right now, it'd be hard from a season-long perspective to not take Jokic number one right now with how dominant he's been. But my question isn't about the Joker. It's actually about GA. GA dropped that season high last night against the Phoenix Suns. I'm in Arizona. I'm kind of a Phoenix guy. I was watching the game, and after, right before the game, I think I had mentioned to you guys that the broadcast booth was like, all right, got to get it to Middleton for the open shot. It goes to GA, misses it from about 18. And after the game, Devin Booker had made a comment to say that when they saw that GA was going to take the final shot, he said, we were in good shape, which total dig at GA. And by the way, seems like a big rub off of Chris Paul coming on Devin Booker. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious about your thoughts overall about maybe Chris Paul and maybe rubbing off a little bit on Devin Booker, but also for like star NBA players to say something like that about GA, who's one of the best in the game.
Yeah, you know, I have a lot of respect for Devin Booker. He's a fantastic player. Giannis has done a lot of things that he has yet to accomplish. So those comments kind of caught me off guard. Like, where's your MVP trophy and where's your playoff win? So, you know, pretty surprising comments, to be honest. But I get where he's coming from. Giannis settled there. He's does not shoot the ball particularly well, and certainly not anywhere on the level that Devin Booker shoots the ball. So, you know, if Giannis is going to settle like that, I get where he's coming from. It makes a lot of sense. Like, that's the shot you want to force him into taking, a far contested jumper, right? So that's a low percentage chance, and I get why the Suns felt good. But I think as far as where the Suns are, I hope that they continue to build off their bubble success. I think a lot of people in the NBA are rooting for Monty Williams to be successful in Phoenix and figure it out with that core of Ayton and Booker. And you mentioned they added Chris Paul this year. So hopefully that they can figure it out and get better. They've improved a lot on the defensive end. I think a lot of that is due to Chris Paul. And, you know, I'm not sure that they're my eighth seed right now, but as the season plays out, they could certainly continue to fight for that spot.
All right, Brett, we'll let you go back and do your other job here. You wear many hats. Before we let you go, real quick, tell me, are you going to accept LeBron James in Space Jam when that does come out eventually? Or is he like just original Michael Jordan for you?
I'm definitely going to watch Space Jam. I love Space Jam.
You love all Space Jams. Brett doesn't care. He just wants to see them all. Yeah, there you go. All right, good stuff, Brett. As always, we appreciate your time and all your efforts here helping us out with the basketball side of things. And Welsh, you know, as we kind of switch gears here back to baseball in this next segment, you know, we're going to break down some of the best rotations in baseball and maybe figure out who the best might be. And that might be a little bit more complex because we could talk about it from a fantasy standpoint. We could talk about it also just from a real life standpoint, or maybe just the value of these guys or the depth of the rotation. Certainly a lot of rotations have kind of bulked up over this offseason. Welsh and I, when we come back here on Fantasy Sports Today, are going to break that all down for you and try to figure out who is the best of the best. So if you like a good argument, stick around. We'll be right back right after this. More Fantasy Sports Today right here on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
When it comes to the best rotation in baseball, there's actually a few nominees that are worthy of our consideration. And Welsh and I right here on Fantasy Sports Today are going to take you through them and see if we can pin it down. And we've got a few of the top rotations that we're going to break down for you. And let's start with a rotation that is just basically a season removed from a championship. And unfortunately, injuries and age and some other things have set into it. But let's start with the Washington Nationals. Now, Welsh, I know from a fantasy perspective, a lot of people are hoping for bounce back for Steven Strasburg. I mean, carpal tunnel syndrome. I mean, this guy's had everything. You find something, Steven Strasburg, chances are he's had it at some point. Max Scherzer's been showing a little bit of wear and tear in age. I want to talk to you about him as well. Patrick Corbin, who I loved going into last year, was a huge disappointment. I don't know if it was just the getting thrown off of his routine in 2020 or if it's physical or a combination of both. And then they have Austin Voth and John Lester pulling up the rear. Now, I got to tell you, this rotation for me, it's all about what Max Scherzer is. You know, as long as Max Scherzer is there and Max Scherzer of old, then we're good. The problem is, I feel like we're just getting old Max Scherzer, and that's what I'm a little worried about, and I'm starting to get concerned. I see the ADP is still relatively high. We still see some great performances from him, but let's start with Scherzer, work our way down from this bunch. What's your take on the Nats and whether or not Scherzer can once again go back to being the dominant ace, or do we have to accept now that, look, there's just a lot of mileage on this guy, and maybe he can't go out there and make 33 starts anymore.
I'm not sure if he can't make 33 starts, but I do think there's an acceptance we've had to have with a lot of these guys. We had to have it with Justin Verlander for a couple years before he had adjusted. We had it with Clayton Kershaw for the last couple, and these guys reestablishing and readjusting as pitchers of who they are. Scherzer's a freak, and he hasn't had to do that. He's been able to pump and just, you know, pump out big fastballs and just keep going big innings and strikeout. So it's gonna have to change a little bit. But I think you can get, I don't think you're going to get so much what you got last year with Max Scherzer. I think you're going to get a solid 90 plus ish percent of what we've had of the past of Max Scherzer. But I disagree that I don't think this rotation just goes by the side of how Max Scherzer is. I don't think they live and die by Scherzer. I think it is an old rotation. Like, it's a really old rotation, especially on the bottom end, that I think it's more about the depth. And I don't want to jump ahead, but there's a couple players I think are more, there's one particular I think is more important.
All right. So Strasburg at this point in time, are you going to be investing any shares in him? Do you feel like he is investable at this point, considering how, I mean, it's just like every year we kind of get looped into this. He has two 200 inning seasons. And outside of that, it is just a crapshoot. It feels like every single season.
Absolutely not. I mean, I wanted to say it immediately when you asked the question. Absolutely not. The nice thing is he's cheaper. His price is a lot more palatable, but no, he's the Giancarlo Stanton of pitchers. You cannot trust Steven Strasburg.
I talked about yesterday with Boggs, you know, and I put him to it. You know, we had a segment yesterday. One of the guys was Giancarlo, and you could see just every fiber as being having to go, yeah, his ADP is too high. And you could see he was just miserable. And I kind of, you know, stuck it to him there. But let's go to another team here. And let's go with a team that looked maybe a little bit underappreciated. Shane Bieber, about as good as it gets last year, right? Shane Bieber, Cy Young, same Shane Bieber, amazing last year in the American League. Savali, a nice pitcher. Adam Plutko, Zach Plesac had some really good moments. Tristan McKenzie burst on the scene last year. Now, look, there's some youth here in this rotation. There's no doubt about that. But are we sleeping on this Indians rotation a little bit, Welsh? Because from a fantasy perspective, I feel like, well, Lindor's gone and everybody's throwing up their hands about the Indians, but Ramirez is still there. They signed Rosario. They still got the Franimal there, Franmil Reyes. There's still a lot of offense that could be had. You got a great manager. I don't know. I feel like the Indians are kind of falling into a really comfortable place here, and I like all of these arms on any given night to give you a quality start. So what's your take here on this grouping, and do you have one in particular, obviously non-Bieber related, that you want to highlight?
Yeah, I kind of don't think these guys belong on this list. I appreciate what you're saying here, and I think they're being given the benefit of the Cleveland Indians doubt. And what I mean by that is the Indians just push out great young pitchers, and they seem to be able to do everything right. Really good analytical developmental team. But if you were to go put a lot of these guys in other rotations, if you were to put Plutko in the Mets, I don't think you feel that much better. I think it's as a whole of what the Indians do with their rotation. So I think it's a relatively mediocre rotation. I like Savali though. Savali is definitely my guy. I think he can eat up some innings. He's much cheaper than Plesac. Tristan McKenzie's got some deficiencies, and it's not just about his weight. It's just some deficiencies that might get taken advantage of in a longer season. So I think the lack of offense, I think the lack of experience hurts this rotation. And outside of Bieber, it's probably Savali for me is the only other one. But I wouldn't put them in the same tier as the rest of these guys.
You know, I could see myself having a lot of shares of Aaron Savali this year. I like where his ADP is. I think he's a steady pitcher. You know, I know there's a couple hiccup starts, but that's every pitcher. But for the most part, last year, he was very good. We used him a lot in DFS here on the program. So I'm keeping an eye on him. And I didn't have a lot of season-long shares of him last year. So after watching him and having a lot of season DFS shares, and that's the good thing about playing both, is you start to catch on to certain guys. And then if you don't have them on your team, or you couldn't pick them up off the waiver wire or make a trade, you can go out and draft them the next year. And that's what's nice about, you know, kind of having that crossover between season long and daily fantasy on FanDuel. All right, let's go to the next one here. Probably more along your lines here. We're kind of building slowly here up the ladder. Yeah. And the Padres certainly did a lot to retool this rotation. They brought in Yu Darvish. They brought in lefty Blake Snell. Dinelson Lamet had a great season last year. Small sample, yes. But Joe Musgrove, another guy too, I think you can all agree, took a step forward last year. And Chris Paddock has a world of talent. Still needs to figure out that third pitch, Welsh. I feel like that's kind of the detriment there. But there's more guys. Like, they've still got the Mackenzie Gores they've still got some other talent in the minor league system. So there's depth past these five, which we all know you're going to need seven or eight starters probably at some point in time in the big leagues over 162. So is it just as easy as, hey, the Padres are the best because they added two of the better pitchers in the league in the same offseason?
I'm not going to say that they are the best, but boy, do I think they could be. I love their rotation. I love Darvish. I think Snell works great here, but there are enough questions that I think surround this that can't put them in an elite territory. I'm a big Paddock guy, but like you said, struggled last year. He was really working in spring, trying to get that third pitch going. I want to say it was the curve that he had been working on. Joe Musgrove coming over from Pittsburgh as a boost, but Lamet is another one of those. Lamet had an insane, insane year last year, almost got under that three Sierra. He strikes out guys left and right, but he's got major injury issues. So between Snell going deep, Darvish getting older, Lamet with the injuries and Paddock struggles, yes, they've got depth and Adrian Morion and Mackenzie Gore, but it's a little to anoint them the best. It's a little too youthful with a few too many questions to give them the nod, but boy, I think they have the upside. It's like taking a rookie, like a Luis Robert last year. You can see the upside. Right. You got to take him kind of high and you're hoping it pays off. That's what the Padres are.
Yeah, I'm slightly concerned about Blake Snell because whenever the Rays give up somebody, I don't know, it's always like a red flag to me because their evaluation's usually so good on guys. So
you know, it's just funny how you said that. Well, when you said that, it's funny you brought that up because like the Indians, to me, I feel like people give the Indians that Rays benefit. Like if the Rays pick someone up, people are like, ooh, what's going on? Well, same thing would happen if someone is in the rotation for the Indians. And on the inverse, if the Indians get rid of someone or the Rays get rid of someone like Blake Snell, you go, what's wrong? Why aren't they doing it? But just remember, the Rays don't like to spend money. That's probably good enough.
That's true. That's probably true. But, you know, they also lost Morton, too. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, if you're going to lose Morton to free agency, then you understand, well, you know, maybe we could figure out some way to keep Blake Snell.
If you're only going to pitch pitchers three innings, you know, per outing, you don't need to spend $8 million or $10 million on any pitcher.
I guess. I mean, it's going to be fascinating. They are the little league team of Major League Baseball. We all know that. Yeah. Johnny pitches and Jimmy pitches and Timmy pitches. Everybody pitches. All right. Everybody pitches for the Dodgers, too. And I know this feels like the foregone conclusion, but I'll ask it anyway. You know, let me throw the negatives out there. Clayton Kershaw's back, still an issue last year at times. He's another year older. Walker Buehler had some inconsistencies. Urias still figuring things out. Dustin May, another two-pitch pitcher. David Price didn't pitch at all last year, and Tony Gonsolin, not a big strikeout guy. So there you go. I gave you a negative about everybody. But that being said, I guess you could probably go and flip that script and, you know, throw that guy Trevor Bauer into that rotation now as well when that is now completed. So basically you got Kershaw, Buehler, Urias, Bauer, all these guys. So now that you've added Bauer into this Dodger rotation and officially, obviously, that'll come down later this week. So I guess here's the question. Is it a foregone conclusion? Are the Dodgers the best rotation in baseball?
I mean, that's what it looks like. That's who I would say. Is anything a foregone conclusion with to do with pitching anymore? I don't know. I think there's some, you know, there's some teams in the AL, some Yankee people might want to kind of speak up a little bit. Braves have got like a nice young rotation and they brought in Charlie Morton, but there is no team that has a three in Kershaw, Buehler, and Bauer, not even close, that they get to throw out there. I mean, even the Padres, you know, if the Padres are in a playoff series, they're going to go Darvish, Snell, and then just pick one of the others. It's still not Kershaw, Buehler, and Bauer. So then you know, move past that, and they've still got David Price, who's coming back. Tony Gonsolin was fantastic. Julio Urias, Dustin May. You're talking about not the same type of depth that the Padres have. The Padres have young depth that also doesn't have enough experience. Gonsolin, May, and Urias pitched some serious innings last year and into the playoffs. This is the best rotation in baseball, and I just, you could try to refute it, but I just don't think it's going to go well.
All right. Is there another rotation we didn't highlight in your opinion that might be kind of sneaky good this year, in your opinion, as you're looking, you know, forward just from a fantasy perspective and a reality perspective as well?
I mean, from the, like, there's some, I think like the Brewers don't get the amount of credit that they would deserve, and like Woodruff and Burns, but I don't know that they have the depth. The Braves would be another one of those that I would take a look at as well.
All right, there you have it. We're going to hit a break. We come back, we're going to talk to our good pal Andrew Erickson and talk about some of his guys that we're looking forward to in 2021, because it's never too early to start to prepare for your fantasy football drafts. I don't care what Craig Mitch tells you. We'll be right back right after this with Andrew Erickson of PFF. Don't go anywhere. Stay on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Fantasy Sports Today, right here on Sports Grid. And of course, we can't truly say goodbye to the fantasy football season without saying goodbye to our dear, dear friend from Pro Football Focus, the one, the only, Andrew Erickson. Andrew, before we get to our little list here, we're going to look ahead to some of your guys, quote unquote, of 2021 that we've already got to keep our eyes peeled for. And some of our guys are going to overlap. Spoiler alert. We got to talk about our boy Tom Brady winning another Super Bowl. Unbelievable. You know, Andrew, every fiber of my being last week wanted to say Tom Brady was going to win, and I just didn't have the guts to do it because I kept saying, but everyone's saying he can't, and that's when Tom Brady's going to win, but it just didn't feel like anybody could beat the Chiefs. Well, he did yet again. So are you just as astonished as I am? I mean, what more is there you could say about Tom Brady at this point?
It's unbelievable what we're seeing. We're witnesses to just history right now, and I think that we should just all try to enjoy it. The fact that this guy is doing the unbelievable, and the matter of the fact is, if he wasn't a sixth-round draft pick, if he had been taken, you know, number one overall, he probably would have retired already because he probably would not have had that much more to prove. But he just continues to find ways of motivation, and I think that's so huge with anything that you do in life is if you don't have conviction to do something – chances are you're probably not going to do it, but he, in his maniacal way, is being able to figure out, like, things to challenge himself, and now, okay, I'm going to leave Belichick, I'm going to go to a new offense in a COVID offseason, you know, no reps, I want to make it as hard as possible, I'm going to beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl at home, and then next year I'm going to get to play the Patriots in Gillette, I'm going to beat Belichick head-to-head. I mean, that's all he's got.
You know, he's living for that. You know, that is circled on the calendar, Michael.
Oh, I got it circled on the calendar.
Oh, that is going to be good television for sure. And who knows, maybe Tom Brady will make it back to repeat. At this point, why would anyone tell him no? So let's look ahead, non-Tom Brady stuff. And let's start a quarterback, and let's start with one of your guys that you got your eye on. And I understand why, because Jalen Hurts certainly has a ton of athleticism. Another guy who kind of like in that Brady mold. Every time you tell him he can't, or every time you tell him, you know, someone else is better, he goes, oh, yeah, well, watch me. And I think it feels like a foregone conclusion that Wentz is going to get moved just somehow. I know it's taking a little while right now, but still, it feels like Jalen Hurts at some point in time, whether it's, you know, beginning of this year or not, is going to get a chance. So why is Jalen Hurts for you somebody to keep an eye on in 2021?
When I look at fantasy quarterbacks, the thing you first need to ask is, do they run, number one, and do they throw deep, number two? Mm-hmm. Jalen Hurts checks off the boxes when it comes to rushing upside and throwing the ball downfield, being aggressive. You know, that's what he did last year in the games that he played, and those translated into fantasy points. Weeks 14 through 17, he averaged nearly 24 fantasy points per game, and that includes week 17 when he was benched for who knows what reason. If you remove that game, he was around 26.6 fantasy points per game, which only trailed Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. Again, the theme with these guys is they add value as rushers. And again, we can talk about how great Tom Brady is. He is great. He's awesome. He wins all the time. But he's not the best fantasy quarterback because he doesn't run. It's just as simple as that. Right. He's got to throw for 400 yards. He has to throw three touchdowns. He doesn't have a type of floor that is offered by these rushing quarterbacks. And again, people are pointing to Jalen Hurts' his completion percentage. Oh, it's terrible. Well, he didn't have any time to build any chemistry with any of his receivers.
Right. And how many wide receivers does he really have there anyway? Which brings us to another guy, too, who's on your list, which is Dallas Goedert, who had a fine season last year. Zach Ertz looks like, I don't know if he's going to kind of go in the package along with Wentz or what, but I think his days of elite tight end are probably behind him. That being said, even if they do go out there and draft a big-time wide receiver, Dallas Goedert is still going to be part of that offense. So do they kind of go hand-in-hand for you, Hurts and Goddard?
Yeah, PFF tweeted something out, you know, with my face on it. Obviously, you know, I got to represent the brand, but it's basically the Eagles. You know, the combination of Hurts and Dallas Goedert is set to take flight. You know, I like the little Eagles, you know, moniker there.
I see what you did there. Wait a minute. I'm the one makes the dad jokes around here. When did you get to do this? That's not fair. You can't rob me of the one thing I do so well. I mean, come on, brother.
I've grown up a lot in these past, you know, couple of months in quarantine.
2020's aged us all, my friend.
But Dallas Goedert looks like he could potentially be their his number one target next season. And Dallas Goedert, in the games that Zach Ertz missed last year, weeks 8 through 12, he was the number two fantasy tight end. You know, averaged 12.3 fantasy points per game, again, behind only Travis Kelce, who was probably averaging like 20 fantasy points per game at that point. But, you know, if you're getting the number two tight end, you know, look at Dallas Goedert's current ADP. He's like way down there. Like, people are kind of like forgetting about him. And he was hurt last year. The whole Eagles offense was really kind of not organized. I'm not sure if that's the best way to describe it. It was kind of a mess for the most part.
That's a very pleasant way to put it, I think.
It was very inconsistent. There was no flow to the offense whatsoever. And now if they go in with Jalen Hurts, they can build an offense around him specifically to highlight his rushing ability, highlight the ability of the tight end position. You know, they can use Jalen Reagor still. You know, he's a talented rookie receiver. Yes, he's not Justin Jefferson. But is he just so terrible that he's still a first-round pick? Like, he still looked decent enough when he was playing, when the ball was thrown to him accurately. He can win downfield if they draft another receiver. You know, they have a top, I believe, in the pick in the top six. You know, I've seen them mocking two guys like Ja'Marr Chase or Devontae Smith. So there's a lot of options for this passing offense to increase a lot, be more efficient in 2021. And I think that you're going to see that from Jalen Hurts.
All right, let's move on to a guy that you and I both have big expectations for. It's Cam Akers. That Patriots game was his coming out party. I'm sorry. I was just blown away by him in that game. He had a very good run in the playoffs as well. So I am all in. I have him as an RB1 going into next year. I don't know if everybody else will. I think he's probably going to be right on that fringe, maybe 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. But I am all in on Cam Akers. And I think the Stafford addition really helps too, because to me, you know, Stafford's going to be a very capable quarterback going in there and maybe giving them even some more opportunities to score. And I love that. And I think Cam Akers is going to be a big beneficiary of the veteran quarterback presence. So for you, why is Cam Akers high on your list?
When I looked at the difference in terms of quarterback play between Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford when the trade first went down, kind of, I just looked at the touchdowns, basically. All right, how many touchdowns, you know, per offensive drive, basically, are we losing or gaining from the quarterback change? And over an entire season, you know, Matthew Stafford's worth like 10 more touchdowns on offense than Jared Goff is, or at least was last year. So again, you look at the running back position, very centered around touchdowns. I like that for Cam Akers. And the other thing as well, Matthew Stafford just offers more as a passer, as a threat downfield. Stack boxes. Cam Akers faced the second most stack fronts last year, 52% of the time. No surprise, Jared Goff's the quarterback. Okay, well, we should probably stack the box because they're obviously not going to throw the ball downfield. That's what teams were doing. Adrian Peterson was at 48%. DeAndre Swift was at 36%. So if Cam Akers sees a 36%, which is definitely more around the average, I mean, that's just going to give him more opportunities to bust up big runs. And you can't forget about the fact that Swift was super involved in the passing game last year. 46 catches, 56 targets, you know, as a rookie it's pretty good for a rookie running back. So I think that really bodes well for Cam Akers, who flashed a little bit of the passing game as the season kind of, you know, went on towards in the playoffs of the Rams.
And Deontay Johnson, now there's a guy that I was very much in on last year, and I'm going to double down on it. I understand he had a lot of drops, but he also had a ton of targets. So with great power comes great responsibility. As far as I'm concerned, I don't see anything changing right away. I mean, yes, I'm sure they're going to address the run game somehow, but Deontay Johnson certainly seems like the safety blanket, at least for Big Ben, in my opinion. So we back in again on Deontay Johnson in 2021.
Of course we're back in on Deontay Johnson. I think that people are overblowing the whole drop thing. Drops are so hard to project from year over year. It's almost impossible to be, oh, well, this guy drops the ball a lot. He must be terrible. Look, the thing with drops is, why are you throwing them the ball? Because he's open. That's the most important part. If N'Keal Harry had 15 drops, I would be ecstatic. But he can't, because he can't get open. So he doesn't get the opportunity to drop the ball anyway. So again, so I apologize to N'Keal Harry, just a very sad Patriots fan, you know, speaking on N'Keal Harry. But Deontay Johnson, looking at his expected fantasy points, so basically looking at his opportunity in the offense, he was the seventh ranked receiver at 16.8 fantasy points per game, expected fantasy points per game, which ranked seventh among all wide receivers last year. He underperformed by over 22 fantasy points, and that just means that things are going to kind of regress to the mean. And the thing that with him in specific is he underperformed versus Chase Claypool, who overperformed.
Right, right.
So again, those are going to meet in the middle, and I have to assume that their ADPs are probably going to be kind of close, probably kind of similar to like a Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. You know, people won't necessarily be like, oh,
Cooper,
it's definitely this.
Robert Woods, that also comes to mind in recent years, too.
Because they're both going to be, you know, they're both nice guys to target for sure. But because they're both nice targets, no one's going to kind of, they'll both kind of end up being values based on realistically, you know, Deontay Johnson should probably be ranked higher, at least the way I see it.
Well, I mean, is it so simple as saying Deontay Johnson in full point PPR? And if you're in a standard league, you take the touchdown equity of Claypool. I mean, that feels like a good in between. And if you're going to split the difference, then take Deontay Johnson in the half. That's kind of my approach anyway.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know. I mean, I only play with, standard leagues.
I know people
only,
do.
Only
though.
Dinosaurs play those leagues.
Well, look, I'm not a dinosaur, but I do know some people still play in those, or they play in the half PPR, which we can have the discussion depending on where you're at. All right, one more guy on your list. And look, last couple of years, I was very excited about Deebo Samuel in San Francisco. I thought it was a great landing spot for him. But I have to, at a certain point, kind of just come to realization that dude's just not on the field. And I love when they drafted Brandon Ayuk because they identified him as a guy that fits the style of what they want to do. Quick slants over the middle. That's what they do. And Brandon Ayuk was good at that. Runs the jet sweep, does all that stuff. Ayuk, I think, is going to be a very trendy pick. He finished very strong in 2020. So do you think 2021 is going to be the year of Ayuk?
I think so. All he did on the field was produce. You know, every single week that he played, he was absolutely insane. He ranked, in terms of points per game, he was up there with some of the best receivers. He ranked 17th in points per game. He ranked inside the top 10 in terms of expected points per game. And no one's ranking Brandon Ayuk as a top 10 guy, but that's literally what his production was as a top 10 wide receiver last year in full point PPR. So Ayuk just profiles as the alpha receiver in that offense. Again, Deebo Samuel is found his role as someone that is all yards after the catch. The guy has negative air yards every single week. And again, that's going to end up limiting his production because sometimes he's not going to just be able to, break five tackles on a run. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it, his injury history, that is because of the style of play he has. He doesn't just run slants and get open downfield. Everything is after the catch. So,
well, that's also the offense. I mean, when you watch the 49ers, they are attack the middle of the field, quick slant. I mean, that's what they do. So, he's a product of that, but you're right. Ayuk has a little bit more of that, that deep threat potential in there. And we'll see what happens with the quarterback position, because that's certainly in question as well. And it's tough to put Ayuk despite the productivity into that wide receiver one discussion, because wide receiver one is just so darn deep. I mean, there's just so many good names in there, but Ayuk kind of does feel like that group of T. Higgins, CeeDee Lamb that, is going to, let's say, have that potential to jump. And we love those jumpers at wide receiver who can jump into that next tier. You either draft them as a two, but they play like a one. I love that. Those are my favorite guys. And you're like that. I draft you as a one. That's a lie. I draft you as a one. You are a one. You always return investment. I want to thank you all year for your contributions here. And I can't wait to continue with the Black Book this year, you coming on, and I can't wait to continue us talking football together because it's so darn fun. Again, if you haven't already, please go follow this man on Twitter at @AndrewErickson_. Check out all of his work on PFF, Pro Football Focus. He's doing a lot of draft content there. Real quick, 10 seconds. Does Brady repeat again in 2021?
No, because it's going to be the Patriots.
Oh, God, I don't feel good about that. But let's hope from your mouth to God's ears. We'll be right back with more Fantasy Sports Today right after this. Don't go anywhere. Stay on SportsGrid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to FST right here on SG. Lots of letters there. But let's talk a little TB12, because yesterday, Welsh, I'm sure you saw it. I know I saw it. I think the whole world saw it. Yep. Tom Brady was having fun on a boat. He was on a boat. It was prestige worldwide. He's throwing the trophy around. And I guess that avocado tequila really hit him pretty hard. But I got to tell you, there's something about like the non-Patriot version of Tom Brady where he is, you know, having fun. Yeah. He's out there on the boat. He's getting hammered. I feel like people are starting to warm up. I think, you know, when you're part of the evil empire for so many years with the Patriots and Bill Belichick and all that stuff, I think yesterday kind of went a long way to the humanization process of Tom Brady. Do you think now, after the seventh title, he's actually a little bit more likable after yesterday's little tipsy two?
I'm not sure if like that'll be the thing that puts people over, but it should. It's similar to when Belichick put his dog in his seat during the draft, if you remember, during COVID.
Like yes,
that kind of like humanized Belichick a little bit. I don't know, because Brady does this one little thing, which I appreciate, and this is what I do love about the guy, is he's like getting dragged out and kind of drunk, and then he throws this amazing between boats. He threw the Super Bowl trophy to Gronk, which was incredible, probably completely lit. But the problem is he also then will do those videos where he's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And he like shows off his rings and he's kind of like,
hey, the bad boy for life stuff. I mean, all this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
yeah, I love it. It's fun.
Yeah. But I think this is the best version of Brady. This is great. And can you imagine what the avocado tequila or whatever it was market looks like right now? There's no chance you can get any in anywhere, probably online or in store. Area. It's probably sold out. Yeah.
Listen, it's you know, people were like, well, he shouldn't be drunk. And I was like, what are you crazy? He just won his seventh Super Bowl. I mean, you win your seventh Super Bowl, you're on a boat with Rob Gronkowski, you're going to be sober? I mean, come on, people. This is, I mean, you got to celebrate a little bit. Good for you, Tom Brady. Earmuffs, James. I know you're still not too happy about this. It's going to take a long time for James to heal on this one. But we come back, hour two of the program. We got a lot more baseball to talk about. The small sample 2020 and what it means, we'll tell you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. More FST right after this.